Hare Krishna. A little bit louder, the sound. Hare Krishna. Okay, children, we have to, all the children who have volume controls, please put them down. That was so many nice pastimes from the Mahabharata. And Prabhupada will actually, we will hear him say, maybe not today, but there's simply no way to avoid difficulties in this world, despite our continuous attempts to maximize our happiness and to avoid all misery. It's simply not possible. Actually, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that if one actually accepts this point, and this kind of preaching actually isn't exactly for the young, because the children have to be filled with some hope that otherwise there's no impetus. But the adults, they have a kind of hope too, and their hope is, even though I could not find the perfect situation, my children will be able to. But the actual situation, first we'll begin with Kunti's prayers, and then we'll talk about things. Talk about life. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nivasesha Sanyavadi Prashkati Desatana. Om Aginatamindasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksas Amilatan Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah. Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sabhandantikam Mancha Kalpa Thurubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayibhicha Patitanam Pramanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. This first canto of the Bhagavatam is very special. In some senses, it's my personal favorite of the cantos. There's wonderful pastimes in it, wonderful stories. And also, it is so deep philosophically. And Prabhupada has given so much practical advice. He wrote this first canto of the Bhagavatam before leaving to the United States on a boat. And he didn't feel comfortable to begin his preaching in the West until he had these books, and he brought these books with him because he wanted to give people this knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam, Pramanam Mamalam, it is the Pramana. What does Pramana mean? What's the translation? Evidence. This is like law books are given as evidence. How do we know something is true? If you study philosophy, there is something, the English word is epistemology. How do you actually get knowledge? How do you know something? So how in the Vedic culture something is known is when it is in Shastra. But there are so many different levels of Shastra. So out of all the different levels of Shastra, that which is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam is amalam. It is faultless, and it is considered the highest statement of evidence, because one shastra will say one thing, another shastra will say so many things. There's 18 different mahapuranas, and some are meant for those in the mode of ignorance to bring them forward, some are meant for those in the mode of passion, and some are meant for those in the mode of goodness. So the ones in the mode of goodness, which give the more clear definition of what knowledge actually is, the Bhagavatam is supreme. It's in a category of its own. So right in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, in this eighth chapter, a little bit of story. Let me just check to make sure that our technology is working here. Is it on? You had it on before. It's working. Amazing. And Prabhupada, he actually, he was not against technology. He was not against money. He was not against anything material. Because Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya Uchite. He saw properly that matter is not meant for me to squeeze pleasure out of, but rather matter is Krishna's external energy. It is Krishna's energy. And the energy should be used in the service of the energetic, the source of that energy. So Prabhupada was very happy to use all matter in Krishna's service, technology, etc. But of course, for us who may not be as determinedly pure as Prabhupada, we have to be somewhat careful when we deal with the material energy, because there's always a tendency to want to use it in our own service, for our own pleasure. And it's very, very, very sticky business. And what happens when you deal with sticky things? One tends to get stuck. Stuck to them, and they get stuck to you. And the purpose that you wanted to use them for becomes minimized to how entangled one gets in these technologies. I remember when you get your first computer or your first mobile phone, especially if you get a smartphone, you think, oh, this is going to save me so much time. But, as we later find out, it is very sticky. And for every one call that you make to someone else where you save a minute, 15 people call you to tell you all the things they want you to do for them. Anyway, that's my experience. So in any case, Kunti Devi was in a difficult situation. But in that difficult situation, there was the greatest blessing. And that greatest blessing was that Krishna was with her. And this is what defines Kunti Devi's character. She saw that Krishna was the blessing in difficult situations, and that's what she saw. And she didn't want to trade perfect situation by material estimation. When her sons were now the rulers, after the entire battle of Kurukshetra had been fought to place Yudhisthira as the king, and now, free from difficulty, Kunti Devi was the queen mother, and everything she wanted immediately she could get financially, power, she had everything now. But where this starts is in the beginning of the 8th chapter, is that Asatthama sent a brahmastra, two brahmastras, to finish off all the surviving members of the Kuru dynasty. He was so angry. Just imagine how much anger you have to have to kill off every member of your the ruling family. You have to be so angry and envious of them. Sometimes we have thoughts like that, but we have learned to not act on those thoughts. But Aswatthama wanted them all finished, and he sent the brahmastra while in Krishna's presence, just as he was preparing to leave, because the battle had been finished already, and his side, the Pandava's side, Arjuna's side, Yudhisthira's side, they were victorious, and Yudhisthira was to be crowned the king now. So Krishna's mission had been completed, and he was paying his respects to Kunti Devi now as he was leaving, because she was elder, she was his father's sister, Vasudeva's sister. So he was repaying respects to her before leaving. This Prabhupada, when he talks about this point, he says, this is the Vedic culture. It is filled with respect. It is filled with respects for seniors, for the elders, because through the elders, respecting the elders, then tradition is passed on. The culture is passed on. And this culture had a particular purpose that the Mahabharata transfers, the purpose of all the dharma, the purpose of all the artha, the purpose of all the instruction, the moral and good instruction and the stories, is that the culture is passed on, and the purpose of the entire culture is to understand that life, human life, has a purpose, a spiritual purpose attached to it. So how does one gain that? Is through a cultural transmission. It used to be that when you ask the older people in a class, where did you hear the Mahabharata from? Where did you hear about Krishna from? And they will invariably tell you their grandmothers had read it to them and told them the stories. The seniors were given so much respect, and they were the ones who put life's challenges in perspective. Having been through life already, they had a perspective on the difficulties of life. And they had a spiritual perspective on it. But now when you ask the adults, even the young adults, or the not even so young anymore, where did you hear the Mahabharata and about Krishna from? And no one will say from their grandmothers, because it was much easier to put on a video in those days, because Mahabharata was played on the video and then it was sold as video. So everyone hears it in that way without the personal touch, or heard it in that way. And now it's one step less, I would say, with all due respect. Where did you hear about Krishna from? From the cartoons about Krishna. And then because that Mahabharata that we saw, I can't remember, Ramanand Saga produced the Ramayana, but I don't remember who produced the Mahabharata. Everyone, you all know, okay. I wonder how you happen to know that. But there's no Siddhanta comes through, no actual philosophical conclusion. It's just a bunch of stories, almost. And the cartoons, yeah. When you read, you actually hear from the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And the children say, that's not how it is, because then I saw in the cartoon it's something different. And actually, we think it's a blessing to have this, the cartoon images of Krishna in our mind. But actually, it's a curse onto the imagination of the children. Actually, it's a curse onto the imagination. Because here, in that cartoon, or in the Mahabharata, the video, it defines Krishna, who is Swayam Bhagavan, who is unlimitedly beautiful. So if I asked you to conceive of what unlimitedly beautiful it is, the imagination, the mind will do something wonderful in conceiving what unlimitedly beautiful is. But then you have, okay, he's cute in the cartoon, but he's not unlimitedly cute. So it actually brings it down to a limited level, because the imagination doesn't have the opportunity to understand what unlimitedly beautiful is, or play with the concept. So it's not actually a step forward, but it also gives grandmothers less to do. But anyway, no one stays with their grandmothers anyway, so they're not even here. So Kali Yuga is progressing. Kali Yuga is progressing. And in Bhagavatam, it describes Puranarko Dhanoditaha. This is one of the main questions that's asked by the sages. Headed by whom? Shaunaka Rishi. Where has, now that Krishna has departed from this world, where will we go? Where has Dharma, true Dharma, and Jnana, true knowledge, true religion and true knowledge, where will they go for shelter? Kalo Nasta Drisham Esha. In Kali Yuga, where everything tends towards degradation, I never thought I would be saying it when I'm now old. Because when we're young, we hear people saying, when I was young, things were so much better. But now that I'm older, I can say that, and I do say that. When I was young, or you could say nowadays, things are so much worse, and people don't even know that they're worse. People are satisfied. Things are better, because nowadays, does anyone still remember how to write? They actually teach you how to write in school nowadays?
Unfortunately, they do.
Unfortunately, you see? And nowadays, instead of hearing from the grandparents, a different concept is placed in the children's consciousness, and that is called evolution. So as life goes on, we evolve. We evolve means improve in every way. We know more. We do things better. So who is more intelligent, us or our parents? for example. Well, everyone knows. I mean, everyone knows. I mean, my parents don't even know how to properly use a mobile phone. They don't even know how to, I mean, surfing the internet. And, you know, and what does... So there's something actually very... The English word is insidious, which you can translate... Anyone can translate it? Insidious into simpler English? Very almost like devilish. Very... It's wrong. It's bringing people downward. We don't mean to discourage the kids, but it's actually true. And the more you play with the material energy, the newer and more fleshy and appealing it is, rather than it actually helping you control, it will actually place you as being more controlled. Previously, primitive people, they used to farm the land. And if you go into little old Whiteman Park over here, you'll see the implements, some of the implements, right? These big wheeled carts. Has anyone ever seen those big wheeled carts? How strong the people were in those days to be able to move around logs. And this was less than maybe 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago. Nowadays, people are so... Because they sit in front of a foolish pewter all day long, their whole lives are based on that, and their necks hurt, and their backs hurt, and their this hurts, and their that hurts, and I could tell you all about it, because I experience it. So everything goes down in Kali Yuga, and the children, with no disrespect to our esteemed youth here, because we're so much appreciating that they're present, but... They play games all the time in there instead of talking to people, instead of interacting with people. They're just playing games all the time. And what that does from the Ayurvedic point of view to your vata energy, it just increases it so much. And when that happens, very difficult to control your mind. And when the mind is not controlled, how can one be peaceful in this world? So this all, to some degree or another, comes, but not in such a direct fashion. But here, Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada will speak about this, especially for devotee, prema paramarto mahan. It will point us in the right direction as to what the actual goal of life is. And the goal of life is prema. And here's where everyone is saying, oh yes, 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 we should have love for Krishna, or love for Krishna. But we can't also at the same time love the material world and want to stay in the material world and enjoy the material world, and at the same time keep one foot in the rowboat of the material world and the other foot in the spiritual world. Because if you have one foot in one rowboat, if you could sit here, then it would make it easier for me so I could ask all kinds of probing questions to the youth over here. Because sitting in the back, I know what that means. It means, casual observer. We'll see how much we're going to enter into this one. But when we sit in front, especially, we have pop quizzes and questions all the time. It's easy, you know, it's put some pressure on that we have to be present. So, who remembers what I was talking about? Let's see who was really paying attention. Yes. Yes, what happens if you put one foot in one rowboat, and another foot in another rowboat? Yes, who will be able to predict without doing a computer simulation of it? Yes, you will fall down into the water, which was not one's plan. So actually speaking, there is an hourglass of our life with sand pouring through it. At this very moment, the sand is pouring through, no matter how old we are, and we all have a certain amount of life left. And we have a challenge in our life. At least before the sand has poured through completely and the last grain goes through, we want to develop love for Krishna and be detached from the material world. I tell this story very frequently, but it's one that was told to me by a devotee who's now in his probably 50. And he told me about not his grandmother, in English it would be great-grandmother. How do you say that in Hindi? On his mother's side. Go ahead. Huh? Okay. So his father told him this story, that they were from a good family living at that time in Pakistan, before the partition of India, and they were Sharma, a Sharma family, pious, Brahminical family, and the grandmother was especially pious. And every day she would read the Bhagavad Gita, and every day she would chant. And the particular names of Krishna that they would chant were Radhesham, Radhesham. She would read Bhagavad Gita every day, and every day she would chant Radhesham, Radhesham. And she was very elderly. And in those days, people were so unfortunate that to bathe, they just couldn't turn on the hot water tap, but they would go to the river. And every day, first thing, she would go to the river and bathe. And as she was walking there, she would chant Radhesham, 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 Radhesham. And then when she would come back, she would chant Radhesham. And when she would reach the house, she would read Bhagavad Gita. But one day, she called all the family members together after she came back from the river, after bathing. And she said, now what? I'm going to put a cloth on the ground, and I want all of you to surround me and chant Radhesham, Radhesham, Radhesham. And this devotee's father, who was a young boy at that time, was young, not to imply that any of you are young, but like your age. His brother, his elder brother, was very, very attached to her. And everyone immediately understood what this meant. How she knew, I don't know. But everyone understood this meant it is time to go. So she laid down, and one of the boys, this devotee's father's elder brother, now he began to cry. Why? Because he loved her so much, and it was time for her to go. She began to cry, and immediately she said, take him away. Why? Because if he's crying when it's time for me to leave, then what am I going to be thinking? I'm going to be thinking, oh, I love him so much, this poor boy, and who's going to do this, and who's going to do that for him, and he's still this age, and how is he going to grow up? She was such a strong soul, such a strong devotee, she said, take him away. Not that she didn't love him, but at this crucial time, she did not want to be distracted from Radhesham, 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 Radhesham. So she is one of my heroes. I never met her, of course, but she's a hero. And they took him away, and all the rest of the family chanted Radhesham, Radhesham, and she left this world. Astounding. So who is fortunate? She had to walk all the way to the the river to bathe. And now we have it so easy. We have it so easy because our life is centered around making things, quote, easy. So now we don't have to walk anywhere. And in fact, if you go out in the hot season, especially here in Perth, you can go out and drive your car in the streets and not see anyone. So now life is so easy. But we have to work and work and work and work and work to make life so easy. So is it really easy? Has it improved our consciousnesses? Has it actually improved our health, our families? Even from that level, the morality? Now, because there is less anxiety in life, and there's nothing we can do about it, practically speaking. But Kunti Devi will give us some good advice. We can't stop the way that the world is going. This is Kali Yuga. But we can adjust how we deal with it and be intelligent and not get fully absorbed in it, not be fooled by it, not be fooled by the technological advancement and think that technological advancement means progress. Prabhupada compared to the progress of material society to the progress of our age. So as we progress in age, we get older and closer to death. That's progress. So on that happy note, we'll see what Kunti Devi. But at least everyone's listening. Because it's real, it's true. And everyone knows it's true too. So in the first verse. So how many verses are there in Kunti Devi's prayers? Raise your hand. 20? 20? Usually when I ask a question, okay, but I ask the children. But you, oh, then again you say, but I'm also a child. That's true. All those in child bodies who are eternal but in child bodies. How many verses are in Kunti Devi's prayers? Usually when I say this, I have to say without taking out your mobile phone. 20? 6. Yes. Thank you for raising your hand here. And here's the first of the prayers. Brahmo Tejo Vaniya Muktaya. Everyone together. Brahmo Tejo Vaniya Muktaya. Atmajai Saha Krishnaya. See, what this is about is Kunti Devi. This isn't Kunti Devi speaking. This is before Kunti Devi speaks. But what has happened is Asatama has thrown a Brahmastra at the Pandavas to kill all the Pandavas, and at the same time, another Brahmastra to kill Maharaj Prickett, who's in the womb of Uttara, his mother. And Krishna, from the outside, manifesting himself outside, has protected the Pandavas from this Brahmastra. And then, from inside, he has assumed his forearm form. How many arms? Forearm form. And he's protected, and this description is there later in the 12th chapter. He's angry that his devotee is being attacked. And his eyes are reddish, the super soul with four arms, and whirling a club around. And he protects the unborn child. And Prickett Raj sees him. And he's called, in Hindi, what is the word for examination? Pariksha, if I'm... Yes? So he is called Pariksha because he's examining everyone after this point. Where is that person who has protected me? Where is that person? Where is that person? And actually, that's the perfect teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Where is Krishna? 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 I want to find Krishna. 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 And Maya will say, oh, let's see. Here's something else. Here's something else. Here's this. Here's that. Here's that. What do you really want? So it takes actually full sincerity and full purity to get to be on the level that we only want Krishna, and we don't want anything else. But this is the perfection of a soul's consciousness. And when we understand that is perfection, not trying to fulfill material desires, not trying to go to Swagaloka, heaven, not just wealth. When we understand this is perfection, when we're confronted with what true sincerity is, what is the result in our consciousness? Raise your hand, adults too, if you would like to venture an answer. When we understand what purity is, and that's what we'll get in the Bhagavatam, what will be the result in our consciousness? Gradually, that would be my answer to that, free from material desires, but something has to come long before that happens. Yes. Embarrassment and humility. When the light goes on, I don't know how, who's officially a teenager amongst you? Yeah, okay. It'll be too difficult to ask the question. When the light goes on in a teenager's room, other ones, not you, for the first time, that hasn't cleaned it for 100 years, first thing is, oh no, oh, look at the state of this room. So when we're confronted with the light that the Bhagavatam is going to shine as to what pure consciousness is like, the first point is not purity and cleanliness, but it's embarrassment and humility. These are the parts that are not really for the... It's more for the adult. So Brahma Tejo Vaniya Muktaya. So when Vaniya Muktaya means saved from the Brahma Tejo, or the fiery effulgent light of the Brahmastra, Atmajai Saha Krishnaya, all those who are born from her, Kunti Devi, all those who are born from Kunti, along with Krishnaya, means, as Mataji said, Draupadi. So being saved from the Brahmastra, she, Kunti Devi, Prita, that's in the last line, of Prita, she, Prayana Abhimukham Krishnam, this is very, very sweet. She and along with Draupadi and the five Pandava sons, she came towards Krishna. She came right in front of Krishna, who was about to leave. And idam aha prita sate. And therefore, she began to speak. And what she speaks in front of Krishna, after being saved from the Brahmastra, her sons, and after her grandson is saved from within the womb, she's going to speak. In what word here? Idam aha, she's speaking prita sati. Prita, or Kunti, is speaking. And she is called sati here. This is a adjective modifying her. You know what? Did you learn about adjectives and everything? What is it? What is an adjective? Modifies a? Yes, modifies a noun. So the noun is prita or Kunti Devi. So she is described as sati, which means completely chaste. So she was completely chaste on every level. She was complete, and it's so interesting because she's called completely chaste, but from a material point of view, she had three children by three different persons. But yet she was completely chaste on that level too. But above all else, she was completely chaste in her relationship with Krishna. She knew no one else but Krishna as her shelter. Very, very interesting. Now, we'll read Prabhupada's translation here. Thus saved from the radiation of the Brahmastra, Kunti, the chaste devotee of the Lord, and her five sons, and Draupadi. What is the word for Draupadi? Krishna, yeah? Yes. Addressed Lord Krishna as he started for home. Krishna was leaving and going back to Dwarka because he had been away for so long, and the residents of Hastinapur were so happy because they were seeing Krishna. But the residents of Dwarka and Krishna's, how many wives? 16,108 wives. That's a lot of wives. But for Krishna, he could have unlimited wives because he's unlimited. So he was in Hastinapur. The residents of Hastinapur were so happy, but the residents of Dwarka were crying. So now the time was approaching when it was time for the residents of Hastinapur to cry and the residents of Dwarka to rejoice. So Krishna was starting for home. Now I would like to read a little bit from Prabhupada's purport here to this. And it's very interesting. Please listen carefully, because We think of Prabhupada, and he's like a grandfather. He's so kind and sweet, but he speaks very, very, very straight. Please listen to what he says. And I'm going to ask you a question, or see what you think about this. This is from Prabhupada's purport. A chaste devotee of the Lord does not look to others, namely any other living being or demigod, even from deliverance from danger. Now, that's the first line. Think of what that's going to mean. That was all along the characteristic of the whole family of the Pandavas. They knew nothing except Krishna. And therefore, the Lord was also always ready to help them in all respect and in all circumstances. That is the transcendental nature of the Lord. He reciprocates the dependence of the devotee. One should not, therefore, look for help from imperfect living beings or demigods, but one should look for all help from Lord Krishna, who is competent to save his devotees. Such a chaste devotee also never asks the Lord for help, but the Lord, out of his own accord, is always anxious to render it. This is very heavy. It sounds so wonderful. It is wonderful. It is wonderful. So what do we do when we leave the class, when it starts raining? Or if we don't want it to happen, if someone happens to become ill, we don't look for help from a doctor? We just depend on Krishna? We don't get in the car when we drive back to our houses? We don't depend on anything or anyone else? We don't depend on our wife to cook for us? We don't depend on our husbands to provide the money to buy the food that to cook for them and the children? And we don't depend on the schools? What does this mean? Huh?
No school.
It means no school. But then it means dependence fully on Krishna. Then that's the postgraduate degree, actually. Really. This dependence on Krishna is what makes a devotee. This is Krishnaika Sharanam. This is the distinguishing characteristic of a devotee. There are other qualities of a devotee, 26 qualities of devotee that are mentioned in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, but this one of the 26 is that which makes a devotee a devotee. Even if the other qualities are not yet manifested, which are wonderful, perfect person, practically speaking, but even if they are not manifested, if someone is Krishnaika Sharanam, Krishnaika Sharanam, if he is fully surrendered to Krishna, which means, and the essence of surrender is Gotripte Varanam Tata, it's full dependence on Krishna, then he is a devotee and he has to be respected in a very, very deep way. But what does it practically mean? Does it mean, as I said, if we get sick, we don't go to a doctor? Does it mean that we can't have jobs? Does it mean so many different things that we are external things we are dependent on? Family, all dependent on each other. Does it mean that the wife should no longer serve, cook the prasadam? You should depend on Krishna. I'm just depending on Krishna. No, it doesn't mean that. I wrote something. I'll actually, when we first come to Krishna consciousness, it's, you know, the prasadam is so nice, there's such nice people and everything. But then when we start hearing about what Krishna consciousness actually means, and it penetrates our consciousness to see that it's very, very, very heavy, then we can get afraid and think, do I really want to do this? Why don't I do something more superficial? Just join for a social group. Or something like that, where everyone will just talk about this and that and this and that, which usually happens while everyone's taking prasadam anyway. But that's not the weight of what Krishna consciousness, what Prabhupada left Vrindavan and came to the West and didn't sleep and published the books and Mahaprabhu came to give. It's not the essence of what it really means, what it can actually give you, what the Krishna consciousness movement can actually give you, what Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada and Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, what they wanted to give us all. We can live on that level, and that's okay, but it doesn't really get the gift, prema dana, the gift. And that, so we can get afraid. Does that mean that if I take this seriously, that I have to give up this and give up that and give up this and give up that, and even affection to my children and family and greater family and uncles and aunties and 15 weddings every month in Bombay? And it could be quite frightening because we're not ready to do such things. And then someone may say, don't worry, you don't have to give up anything, just chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam. And that's also true, but it's not the full truth. The reality is that one day, as that Radhesham grandmother, from her life we saw, and from our own experience, that one day it's going to be our turn also to leave this world. And that one day we will have to give up everything. It's just the way life is in the material world. We're going to have to leave. That's a polite way to say die. And we live our life not thinking about that, because if we only think about that, we won't be able to do anything else. We'll become depressed. But we should live our life in such a way that we are going towards love for Krishna, not away from love for Krishna. Going towards love for Krishna. So some people may be very, very fortunate and go like this. And some people may be very fortunate and go like this. And some people may be fortunate and go like this. And some people may be fortunate and they have to do this, but they're really going in that direction. And some people may be like, it's all fortunate. But let us not live our life when we're going opposite from Krishna, or not considering the fact that my day is also going to come. It's just the very nature of the material world. So what to do? What is the essential things that we have to do to live our life in such a way that we're dealing with the reality of material existence, not in a dream world, an illusion about what life is going to be? Only if this would happen, if only this happens, and we live our life just trying to manipulate and move the material energy to position ourselves so we can get this dream that will, I promise you, will never happen. A dream of the ideal life in the material world. It's just not possible. It's just simply not possible. It is not possible. Even though when we see sometimes the most wealthy people or the most famous people, they give us the illusion that yes, it is possible, but they have their beautiful, wonderful lives. But none of them have a beautiful, wonderful life. And even if they do, which they don't, they also die. I just imagine being the wealthiest person in the world, and then but you can't trust anyone. Everyone who smiles at you and is thinking of how to extract money from you. No one likes you. Everyone is just trying to figure out how to pull money from you. There's no happiness in that. You can't go in public. There's no happiness in it. And everyone's imagining. You have to carry the weight of everyone's imaginary dream. Psychological term is projection. Projecting on you that you're the one who has the happiness and you're the one who can give them happiness. It's just not the way the material world is. When I tell these parts, you have to go like this, or the kids can go like this, because you don't have to hear this until you're a little older. So you can change the channel. But the adults all know. I find, especially in the West, there's that dream. And I find in India, by birth in India, you know that life isn't going to be all sparkly and wonderful. Because life means there's so much duty attached to life. But in the West, the people are disappointed all the time that life doesn't give them what they were dreaming it was going to be. In India, at least, there's the culture teaches them that life means struggle. And even if I once asked someone in Vrindavan, "How's your family?" And he said, "It's always the same." He had a big joint family. Someone is doing well and someone is doing bad. Someone is sick, someone is being born, someone is dying. So the dream, the illusory dream that if only progress, it's going to solve all the problems of life. And science is so wonderful that they're going to figure out how to make us live in this body eternally. Yes, I believe. And you're not supposed to listen to this. You can listen with one ear, though. We want you to hear with one ear. And then if I had a computer and a television that was as big as this pole, and it was 3D, and I could... Only if. So, on the other hand, Kunti was called Sati because she was chaste to Krishna. She was already at that stage of life, even though she was a woman, and even though she was elderly, and even though she was so wealthy, what was valuable to her was only Krishna. She lived her life according to her faith, her exalted, pious faith, but what her real shelter never turned to anything else. But now we will begin her prayer. Can you read? Can you see this everywhere? So Kunti Uvacha, what does that mean? She's going to speak. So this is the first thing that she said. Namaste. Let's all sing together. Namaste purusham tvadyam ishwaram prakriti param alaksham savabhutanam antarabhiravasitam. Could you say it? You five together? Go ahead. Together. Namaste purusham tvadyam ishwaram prakriti param alaksham savabhutanam antarbahirivasitam. Now remember, Krishna, beautiful Krishna, who's not in the form of a cowherd boy at this point, but he's a warrior. He's standing right before her, perhaps on his chariot, maybe not on his chariot. And she's seeing him, and he's about to leave Hastinapur. For her, who knows Krishna, whose life is Krishna, who's experienced Krishna, who's experienced Krishna's protection of her and her family members. This is a devastation. So this is the first words that come from her mouth. Namaste, she first offers her obeisances. Purusham tu adyam. She's offering obeisances even though she knows that Krishna is her nephew. How do you say that on the father's, on the mother's side, son? Huh? Van? Okay, I'll never get it. This is one of the things that's very complicated. One of the many things that is complicated. My mother's sisters, brothers, cousins. You know them all?
No.
No, very complicated for you too. Do you know them all? And the mothers and fathers are different? Do you know? No? You know. Very good. So even though her nephew is there, she's offering obeisances. Now, the nephew offers obeisances to the auntie. Masi, is that right? Is that the right one? Sorry, I told you I never could get it right. So, but she's offering obeisances because she's understood that although Krishna is her nephew in the inferior position playing that role, but actually he's the unlimited supreme personality of Godhead. She's seen him. She has been granted the vision to know that Krishna entered into the as the super soul was already there in one sense, into Uttara and protected Maharaj Prickett. And also Krishna entered, protected from the outside. She's protected the Pandavas. So she's seen him as all-powerful inside and outside. So even though he's her nephew, she still offers obeisances. Why? Because he's Purusham Adyam. So our acharyas play with these words a little bit. So when she says, you are Purusham, Purusham means the male, a male, a person, a male person, Krishna could reply, well, there are so many males. Why are you offering respects to me just because I'm a male? No, you are Adyam. You are the original person. You don't die. Namasye Purusham Adyam. Like Govindam Adi Purusham. You are Adi. You are the original person. Even though you are a person, you are original. But Krishna can also say, well, bodies die. And everyone is a soul, and every soul is eternal. So every soul is also Adya, original. But then Ishvara. But no, you are not only a person and deathless, original, but you are also Ishvara. You are the, what does Ishvara mean? Controller. Literally it means controller, which is an aspect of God. And then Krishna could answer, yes, I am Ishvara, but there are so many Ishvaras. Indra is an Ishvara, and Surya is an Ishvara, and there are so many, and Chandra is an Ishvara. But you are Prakriti Param. You are beyond the material energy. Even though you are a person, even though you are a person, person means you have a body and characteristics. You are Prakriti Param. You have nothing to do with the material energy. And this is the very difficult transcendental point to understand about Krishna, that he is not impersonal, but yet he is transcendental. Yet he is fully spiritual. Yet he has nothing to do with the material energy. But yet he is a person, a supreme transcendental person. And the Advaitavadis, who we also refer to as Mayavadis, or impersonalists, they cannot understand this. They think that him being a person would limit him. Because I am a person, and I am limited. I'm here, I have a form, and my form isn't everywhere because I'm here. But Krishna has a form that is unlimited, beyond material energy. He has a form that's inside of everyone, outside of everything, and yet he's still there as a person, standing right in front of Kunti Devi. This is called Krishna's Achintya Shakti, inconceivable energy. That he's a person and he has a form, but it is not a material form, and it's not a form like those of the material world, but it is unlimitedly powerful and unlimitedly beautiful. And also, we just heard that he also protects his beloved devotees who depend on him. They don't, when they're sick and they go to the doctor, they know that the doctor will try his best, we hope. When we go to the doctor, sometimes we ask them, "Doctor, I have this problem." And I've actually personally had this experience, and he said, "Oh, really?" And then he types it in and Googles it. Has anyone else had that experience? Yeah, Google it. Depend on Google. So even though we go to doctors, even though we get in the car, we depend on Krishna, not on the car and the doctor, because no doctor can, if you say to the doctor, "Can you guarantee me that you will cure this disease that I have?" And they cannot say yes. Or they can say yes, but they will never say yes, because they can't guarantee it, because whether we get cured enough, there's a saying I've seen on one homeopathic doctor's card. He says, "We prescribe and God cures." Or he doesn't cure. Now, to depend on Krishna and yet do your duty, but yet in the depth of your heart be actually depending on Krishna, not on the externals, takes deep, deep devotion. It's easy to make believe. It's easy for the words to come, "Oh yes, I depend on Krishna. I don't depend on my finances, my credit card." Raise your hand if you brought with you your credit card on your mobile phone. None of the Matajis will admit it. Either that or they didn't bring it with them. But usually if you leave your house and you don't have your credit card on your mobile phone, you feel very insecure. What happens? What happens if there's a catastrophe and I don't have my mobile phone and my credit card with me? Have any of you ever had that experience of the insecurity of not having these implements with you? Because we depend on them for our security, and they are durasraya. They are not true asraya. They are not truly capable of protecting us. We all know this, but we build up. Does anyone think your mobile phone or credit card can save you from death? Or if an atomic bomb happened to drop on your head right now, that if you have your mobile phone is going to save you, or your credit card, you're going to be sheltered by your... No one, it's absurd. No one thinks like that. But yet, we all are in that habit. So we want to actually develop new habits, Krishna conscious habits, that will actually give us this shelter that we all long for in this very actually dangerous material world. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. We want to develop our relationship with Krishna, and Kunti Devi is one of our examples. So it's easy to say yes, even though I have these things, I just depend on Krishna. But from what I've seen in my own life, when there is a dangerous situation and I become terribly fearful, there is such a strong tendency to not at all depend on Krishna, but to just become immobilized, not mobilized on your mobile phone, but the mind becomes fearful. And the last thing the mind wants to do is say yes, whatever Krishna wants. I am yours, Krishna. The last thing the mind wants to do is actually take shelter of Krishna and place ourselves in Krishna's hand. The mind will fight. But the Lord, Prabhupada explained, such a chaste devotee never even asks the Lord for help, but the Lord, out of his own accord, is always anxious to render help. He is there. But we need the experiences of life, the devotional experiences, to trust that Krishna is actually going to take care of me. How many more minutes left? Or you're just watching the things go around? Okay. Next verse. Now, we could probably speak for a day, as we do in Bhagavatam classes, generally on a verse and not exhaust it. But we have our mission to try to get to the end by the end. Next verse. Oh, here's the Prabhupada's translation. This is the first verse. Srimati Kunti Devi said, "Oh Krishna..." Could you read it, please? You read this one loudly.
Oh, Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by qualities of the material world. You are existing...
Prakriti Param.
You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are visible to all.
You are?
Invisible.
Invisible. What does invisible mean?
It's somebody. You can't see it.
Can't see him. Invisible? Can't see him. Alak Shesava Bhutanam, he says. That even though you are inside and outside of everything, that means there is no place where you are not, still no one can see you. And we see this with the atheistical type of scientists, not all the scientists, but they will search physics, they will search in the universe, they will search outside of the universe, they'll search in every cell, they'll take particle smashers and speed up little subatomic particles and smash them into small subatomic particles and try to find out where the quarks and gluons and other subatomical particles are, and they won't find Krishna anywhere, no matter how hard they look. They can't see him anywhere. They can't see him in their life. They can't see him anywhere. But the devotees, because they are devotees, because they've cultivated devotion, they see him everywhere. Non-devotees, because they have no devotion, they don't see him anywhere. And devotees, because they have devotion, see him everywhere. If I had a red-colored specs, with the lenses are red, I would see you as red. And if I changed them quickly and put green ones on, everyone would look green. And if I changed it and put, what's another good color? Blue?
Yellow.
Everything would look yellow. I don't see things accurately. But if I put on, have the specs, glasses, as we would call them, of bhakti, of devotion, premanjana charity valochana nena, then we will see Krishna, not just in one place, but in every place. I think, because it is actually 1 o'clock, oh, it's such a nice verse. What should I do?
Read it.
Okay. Well, let's read it all together. Maya javani katsanam agya arhoksajamavyayam nalakshase mudadrisha nato natyadaro yata. Maya javanika means a curtain. So here, Kunti Devi is saying why Alaksha Savabhutanam, why people cannot see Krishna even though he's everywhere, in everything. It's because there is a curtain of Maya. Now what does that mean? A curtain of Maya. And Achanam means covering. He is covered by a curtain of Maya. Or not exactly he's covered. Like clouds cover the sun, but it's covering our eyes from the sun. And when you go up in the plane and you just go below the above the cloud curtain, then you see that the sun has been there all along. But Maya covers, the curtain of Maya covers our eyes because it covers our consciousness. It applies a filter, a red or blue or yellow colored filter to our eyes. And we can't see Krishna anywhere. Agya adhokshajam avyayam. We can't see him anywhere. Even though he's everlasting, avyayam. And he's adhokshajam, which means he is beyond material perception. And agya. So the ignorant people cannot see him anywhere because Maya covers their eyes. And how does Maya cover the eyes? Not literally the eyes, but it covers the consciousness with so many other desires. So many other desires fill our hearts, fill our consciousness. And therefore we don't see Krishna anywhere. Nalaksha se. He is not visible to Muda Drisha, to those who are the foolish observers, Prabhupada translates. Muda, usually he translates foolish, Muda as rascal. Those who have rascal consciousness, they cannot see Krishna anyway. Just like Natto, Natya, Daroyata. Just like on stage, if you look on stage and there's a drama being performed, you may not understand that the person who's dressed as a king is actually one of your friends. So we don't recognize, or Kunti Devi saying, I don't even know who you are. You are the supreme, unlimited Lord. But I, even though I see you right in front of me, I don't actually see you or understand your pastimes. Now, being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternal, irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. Now, I'd like to play there's three little segments of Prabhupada speaking on this verse that I'd like to play, and then we'll end. And we'll end on time at a quarter after. So, put on the first one, and I'll give you a background of what, again, double click it. Now here, Prabhupada speaking on this verse in Mayapur, and he's going to start speaking about one word, adhoksaja, which means we cannot perceive him with material, mundane knowledge or eyesight. But then, in the middle of his class, some of the devotees stand up and start walking out because they have some service to do. So Prabhupada's going to react to that, and more or less the rest of what he say is going to be about that. Yes, put it up a little higher. Yeah.
So our mental speculation and advancement of education is limited between the...
Can everyone hear? If you can't hear, raise your hand.
But Krishna is adhokhaja. Adhokhaja means where these kinds of speculation beginning from Akuksha will not end. Therefore his name is adhokhaja. Adhokhaja. Cut down. Why are they going?
Where are they going?
They are going in some other way. Huh? Ugra karma.
You've spoken about that recently.
Without hearing what he'll do, nonsense.
You're laughing.
Savanam Kirtanam. This is our main business. Savanam. If you don't hear, what he'll do? He'll do simply sense gradually. That's all. But this is difficulty. That we are not very much interested in hearing. And that is the main business. Our bhakti being Savaram Kirtanam Vishnu. We have to hear and we have to speak. But if we are not interested in hearing and speak, then it will be the same Thakurbhati.
Just a Bengali expression meaning God's house.
Formula, that's all. And gradually it will be stopped. Unless there is life of Savaram Kirtanam, these big building temples will become burden. See, if we want to create burden for future, then we may give up this hearing and chanting and sleep very nicely. It will be burden. Golagraha. Not Shivigraha, but Golagraha. Golagraha. Sivigraha means worshipable deity. See, if we give up this Savaram Kirtanam Vishnu, then it will be thought that our Guru Maharaj has given a burden in the neck. Golagraha. This is the danger. So, we must be very much alert in Savaram Kirtanam. Otherwise, all this labor will be futile. This building will be only the nest and nest for the dove and the pigeons. That is the danger.
You can hear the birds there. So Prabhupada is very, very, very strong. You know, when we hear Prabhupada say, what is this? This nonsense. We can laugh because it's not us he's talking to or pointing to. But believe me, when he pointed to you, you did not laugh. He's very, very powerful and very the person who you wanted to please more than anyone else. He's upset. But this is part of the learning process. Chastisement is part of the learning process. So hearing Prabhupada said is very, very important. Now let's go right quickly to the second one. This is what Prabhupada speaks about next. So please take this hearing and chanting, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, very, very important. Take it seriously. Take it seriously. Okay? This is the second one. This is the second part of it, Prabhupada.
Now, who can understand Krishna? There are so many impediments. One side, there is Katena Maya. Another side, everyone is rascal and fool. And another side, Krishna is beyond your sense. This is the position. How much one must be alert? Then one can understand, just like the Gosai. This Krishna is so easy thing to understand, but there is process. So if we do not adopt the process, then how we can understand Krishna? These are the so many difficult things. One thing is the Maya is checking. Maya is trying to put stumbling block for your advancement of spiritual life. Maya, Javanika, Chandam. And the other side, we are all fools and rascals. And again, Krishna is Adhokhaja, beyond the range of sense perception. This is the problem. Unless we become very serious to understand Krishna, it is very, very difficult to understand Krishna. Maya Javinita Chandam.
Okay, go right to the third one and we'll hear. And this is the end, and then we'll end the class right after this. Prabhupada speaks very, very strongly and has so much power because he practices fully what he preaches. Very serious.
The most important process is Savanam. Sinnatana Sakata Krishna Punna Savana Kirtana. If we don't hear about Krishna, then how we make advance? We have to hear. My Guru Maharaj was very kind upon me because I was very much interested to hear that you know. I'm here. I did not understand him, actually. In the beginning, I could not understand him. He was speaking in so high philosophical way. Still, I wanted to hear. That was my only question. So, it is the process. During lecture time, if you don't care to hear, or you do other things, or take rest, that's not a very good sign. You should be very much careful. Then you shall remain mūrādhiṣṭhā. We have taken the vow to see Krishna, to understand Krishna. We should be very, very serious and do the needful, then our life will.
Okay, now it's time for prasadam. Thank you very much. Even though we're a little bit over time, you all listened very carefully, and I appreciate that very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimati Kunti Devi ki jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jai.